Danny and Dusty.
My Uncle Gus is the uncle that likes to work the grill. As soon as he walk in the house, he's like, get away from that grill. You don't know how to start no fire.
With the latest on the Blazers, Ducks, Beavers, and the hottest topics in sports.
We're going to eat a hamburger, okay? Here we go. Chad, throw the match. Now that's a fire.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
I'm not cooking a brontosaurus burger.
The Fan.
Hour 3 here on Danny and Dusty on a Tuesday afternoon. We're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you. And we love you so much that we do this hopefully every year.
Yeah.
Your local Toyota dealers present the 11th annual Fan Golf Classic at Langdon Farms Golf Club on Tuesday, June 24th.
Let's go.
It's back, ladies and gentlemen. Brought to you by Henderson & Daughter, Windows & Doors, and by Philbrook Law Accident and Injury Lawyers. Remember, morning group, afternoon group.
Yes.
You want to sign up for the group that you want to be in now because they will fill up. They always fill up. And just a heads up, the morning one fills up faster.
Yes, it does.
Always the case. Because you want to get out there, have your good day, and then roll over to the Red Shed and have some tasty barbecue from Matt's Barbecue.
Right. You're dang right. Matt's Barbecue is going to be there feeding us after both rounds. We are going to have plenty to discuss in the coming weeks of
all of the rollouts.
Everything that is going to be happening on the course, around the event. It's going to be a great time. It always is a great time. Get your foursome signed up now because, again, I cannot emphasize this enough. You do not want to be the foursome that is like, well, we really wanted to do this. We can't help you.
Yeah.
Once they sell out, they sell out. They're going fast. So go to 1080thefan.com.
Because it always happens.
Oh, always. Every year.
If you're listening like, well, I don't don't complain.
Do it.
Don't complain. Just do it. And if you want to do it, go to 1080thefan.com, click on the Fan Golf Classic logo, and sign up your foursome.
Let's do it.
And if you're worried about cash, just make it like it's Coachella tickets and just finance it.
Wait, people are doing that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, dude. Coachella, they said the average person was floating something. Was it like $3,000 worth? They're putting it on like the Klarna, Affirm, or a credit card. And I'm just like,
nah.
The clout chasing is gross. Also, you can go to an event where you have to walk 20 miles.
That's going to go, Coachella's going to go the route of South by Southwest. Oh, you know, the South by Southwest, the attendance is way down now because they priced out all of the people that used to go to it.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing that anyways, but people want a clout chase, so they'll sacrifice their lives so they can go get some Instagram photos from a concert that's not very good.
You are not going to become an influencer.
No.
That's just like a blanket statement. Yeah. Like, the people who become the best influencers are not the ones who set out to do it. It's just some fluky reason.
It's a magnetic thing. Like, you either have the personality or you have the looks. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You either got it or you don't.
Yeah. I'm so sick of all of that.
Oh, yeah.
All of it. All right.
I'd say there's no amount of BBL you can get, but there is. There is.
But then you go too far. Some people go too far. Some people go too far.
Well, you didn't go very far. You went down an hour and a half to Eugene.
I did. Yeah. I was down at the spring game on Saturday, and we talked a little bit about it with Molden when he was in here, and Alex was down there with his son, Josiah, who plays at West Lynn. And, you know, we were talking with him before we went on the air. I was like, could you imagine what that would have been like when you were playing? He's like, no, man. Like, he goes, that was crazy. And I got to the stadium at 9:30 in the morning. And when I pulled up, there were already cars lining up all the way back to like Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard to get into the tailgate lots. Mm-hmm. And they didn't open until 10. And 40,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
I mean, there may have been more. It really was. It was just the corners of the stadium that were not there. And it's great that the fans show up for that, but it's also because it is actually a spring game, which is what people are not doing anymore. And it was real football.
Mm-hmm.
But I still approach it as what it is, which is a spring game. And people want to make sweeping generalizations or have hot takes about what the actual roster is going to be like. I think that is a fool's game, especially in the spring. Even with the quarterback position, where I thought, all of the quarterbacks actually made a play at one point. Where I was like, oh, okay. Dante Moore had a couple of beautiful deep balls. One was converted. A couple of them weren't. Austin Novosad did the exact same thing. I thought Akili Smith Jr., for his first time coming out on the field, he showed exactly why he was a highly touted prospect. But the reality of it is that people want to look at it and they'll go through the entirety of the game and fail to realize that the offensive lines are mismatched. And there isn't a team in the country that is 10 or 12 deep on the offensive line. Yeah. And that's what you do when you split your rosters evenly. You have got a mismatch of offensive linemen. I think that the starting five are going to be really good. The depth is going to be there. To what degree, I don't know on the offensive line. But I think what really popped to me was how good that defensive line is going to be. Mm-hmm. You lose Jordan Birch, Derek Harmon, Jamari Caldwell. And that group did shine. I think the other group that did is the receiving core is stacked. Mm-hmm. I mean, from DeCorian Moore, who his imprint was felt on the very first possession where he caught a deep ball. And then, you know, Dylan Gresham had a phenomenal game. Jeremiah McClellan, he was a guy that he was a
stood out
four-star prospect. He had a really good spring for Oregon. And then you add in guys like Evan Stewart, who was suited up, did not play in the game. Kyler Casper, who's going to be out there. Justice Lowe, who got significant run in this offense. They are going to be deep at receiver. They're deep at running back, and nobody really popped off the field for, in that running back room. But they have variety, and they have a lot of counter punches that they can throw at you. I thought the biggest thing that was visible was the defensive backs, they changed the way that room looks, and they're long. They are a lot longer than they were last year. A lot of guys over 6 foot, but a lot of guys over 6'2" in that secondary room, and they got 21 defensive backs. I thought guys like Dylan Thieneman, who you want to see kind of, especially when you're replacing a guy like Jeffrey Boss at middle linebacker, or you're replacing an experienced secondary where you had Tysheem Johnson and Kobe Savage as your safeties. Dylan Thieneman coming in, you want to see how quickly those guys are picking it up. Mm-hmm. Betcher, Devin Jackson, Gavin Nix looked really good at linebacker, but Thieneman at safety was already getting guys coordinated and into place. Those are the types of things that you want to see. I don't sit there and look at a spring game and say, yes, plant your flag in the ground on making sweeping judgments on anything. But I think you can be optimistic about that defensive line, especially that edge rushing room where Blake Purchase, Mateo Uyunglele, Tatum Tuioti, Elijah Rushing, they're 4, 5, 6 deep at edge, and so it's going to kind of be that relentless pressure coming off the edge, and those guys are finally coming into their own. And then the wide receiver room, I was blown away by those guys. They're going to be pretty dang good there.
The national talking point right now is that Lanning's not going to go into the transfer portal to address what the national media is saying about the linebacker core.
No, and I think that coming out of the spring game, Betcher coming back is huge. Mm-hmm. Devin Jackson got significant run. I like both Jerry Mixon and Gavin Nix, who Mixon had gotten run last year. Nix is a highly touted linebacker coming out of high school that, I mean, he looks the part. They got a bunch of, that's the crazy part, is they look ready to go out of high school now. And that is wild to think about how large of humans some of these guys are. But one thing that was funny about the game was halftime, I got my questions with Coach Lanning, and one of the first words out of his mouth was, I hope we don't have to punt again. Punting was an issue. And I think every coach, regardless of how the punts go, is probably wants to say, I hope we don't have to punt. But that would have been, if you want to look at, okay, that didn't look good at all. That was the aspect of the game that was brutal. And for Lanning to say that, it was a good chuckle, but it was a joke, but also not great in that first half.
Need to find an Adley Rutschman on campus?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ross James has got a boomer, but and so does Luke Dunn, but they didn't have it on Saturday, and he acknowledged that during our halftime chat, but I don't think that they are going to go into the portal for linebacker. I think that they are comfortable with where they're at as a roster. There are still going to be questions, though, and like this is the thing. when you lose 10 guys to the NFL draft, you have big shoes to fill. When you lose 17 guys ended up signing NFL contracts mm-hmm. from your 10 drafted and the 7 undrafted free agents, that Oregon team was really damn talented. Mm-hmm. But this is what happens, right? This is why recruiting matters. These are why the stars matter. These are why your early portal guys, it matters so much to teams, is because you can get them into spring and then you can have that level of comfort. I wouldn't imagine that they're going to be very active in the portal after, you know, it closed on Friday, because it's a bunch of guys that feel that they weren't going to get the run where they were at.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the spring portal is not where your top end teams in college football are going to get a bunch of starters out of.
So, that's our spring report from Mr. Sideline Reporter himself.
Dude, it was a crazy environment though. Mm-hmm. Star studded too. There was a lot of former NFL guys.
He's good. Christian Gonzalez down there.
Christian Gonzalez. Wasn't Bucky? Bucky yeah. Irving was the other guest coach, but Haloti Ngata, LeGarrette Blount, Jeremiah Johnson, Ed Dixon, Alex Molden was down on the sidelines, Chad Cota, Jackson Powers Johnson, Alex Forsyth. Like, there was a lot of the former players ended up coming back and showing face at the spring game. And look, that's the thing. You get 40,000 fans down there. You bring back the guys that have played in the NFL or play in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You use that as a recruiting weekend.
Absolutely.
And that's the main goal for them, is they had a bunch of highly touted prospects, including Jackson Cantwell, who's the number one prospect in the country right now. He's got a trip to Georgia coming up before he was going to commit yesterday, I think. And then he bumped that back because he wants to go to Georgia as well before he ends up making his commitment. But Oregon high on that list.
Give JPJ my love.
He was excited about Ashton Jeanti. Talked to him about Ashton Jeanti. He's pumped for it. He's pumped for Chip Kelly, and he's already given Chip a bunch of crap. But he's like, I still think he's a duck at heart, you know. And then Pete Carroll as his head coach, he's happy with the direction of the Raiders and where they're going.
That's always good to hear. Coming up, let's actually pivot to the NFL, because you weren't here yesterday to talk about a million other things coming out of the NFL draft. But also, we have a big tight end transaction to get to. We'll get that next year on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan. All right, Dusty, I'll give you a little dealer's choice here. You want to give some NFL draft thoughts, or you want to get to the transaction stuff first?
Well, I can. We'll go NFL draft. We can go NFL draft. Yeah.
What are your takeaways from the NFL draft, non-Shedeur Sanders edition?
Ooh, non-Shedeur Sanders.
Because we'll get to that in the next break.
One thing that I hate is NFL draft grades after the draft is over. And I just think it's so dumb that they're like, these are the teams that did well. Why? Because they picked the guy that you thought they should pick.
Mm-hmm.
Or they did horrible. This is a terrible draft for them. Why? Because they picked a guy that you didn't think they should. That's all it comes down to.
We talked about this a bit yesterday, and I don't believe in grades as far as like the draft value thing. I believe in grades if you're looking at process and like how teams went about it. Like teams picking the top in particular with like the Raiders and Patriots, they addressed what they saw as shortcomings directly. And then there's teams like the Ravens and the Eagles who continue to get richer because they've drafted so well over the last couple of years. But the teams in between, you kind of look at it and you go, okay, what were they trying to accomplish? And did they accomplish that goal in what they did?
Yeah. What I dislike so much is, you know, there's a lot of teams that are down on the Lions and what they did in the draft, where first round, they went Tyreek Williams, defensive tackle from Ohio State, which some people were like, oh, he could have been there in the second round. Well, then they go Tate Rutledge, the guard out of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I have seen draft after draft where the Lions have done a damn good job. Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell work really well together. They know what they need. And when your first two picks are going in at interior defensive line to help alleviate some of the pressure on the outside that Aiden Hutchinson is going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And you always, always go offensive line, because they have done so well with drafting offensive linemen that guess what? You're paying all of them now and getting young, good talent. I don't understand why people are down on the Lions draft. I agree with you, though. I thought, like, teams like New England, the Raiders, I thought the Giants had a good draft of, like, saying, all right, what are our biggest needs that we have? Mm-hmm. I thought Cleveland did a really good job, and people hate on Cleveland moving off of Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter wasn't going to help them win games. You know who is? Mason Graham is going to help you win games, because if they would have gone Abdul Carter at two, it would have been like, all right, cool, you got two guys on the outside that are going to be menaces. Yeah. Well, guess what? Mason Graham, he helps Myles Garrett more than even Abdul Carter did, and you got a first-round pick next year as well. And also, I don't hate the trade that the Jags made to move up. Now, I think they're going to regret not having a first-round pick next year, but Joey Gladstone, their GM, he said it when he was hired, and he said, I'm not going to flinch at making big moves and taking big swings. He didn't do it. They said, all right, Travis Hunter, we're going to go and we're going to make that move for him. I thought outside of him, they had a good draft as well. So I think you can make any draft a good one or a bad one. But I look at the teams that, and I said this heading into the draft, the teams at the back end of that first round were going to get much better. They did. Yeah. Every single one of them got perfect fits. And it happened in the second round as well. This draft was deep. You're going, oh, great. You know, everybody made a big deal about Jahad Campbell going to Philly despite the labrum injury. And then Malachi Starks going to Baltimore. Guess what? They also hit in the second round as well. That to me was the biggest sign of this draft, is that those teams that looked at fit and have complete rosters, boy, did they get better. And I think it's going to be really hard to go from bad to good this next year because of how good, with the influx of young talent, the really damn good teams are going to be.
Was there any team that came out of this draft and you kind of went, huh?
I mean, Cincinnati was one. Mm-hmm. Well, outside of, like,
Cincinnati is the one who we talked about yesterday. They universally they got graded basically the lowest by everyone.
Yeah, I don't understand the love affair with Shamar Stewart, but whatever. And then they just went, I think they had two other linebackers that.
Everything in their draft was in the trenches except for their very last pick.
All right.
They picked one skill position guy and a running back.
Taj Brooks, who's a third down back. He's going to be a receiving back for them. Not an every down guy. But I didn't.
Otherwise, it was in the front seven on the defense or the offensive line.
That one didn't make much sense to me. But again, that's a team that they hit on Joe Burrow. They hit on Ja'Marr Chase. They hit on Hendrickson. Outside of that, man, they've got
some good spots to hit on.
Holes, though. That one did not make a whole heck of a lot of sense. But look, and then Cleveland, it was just confusing that you go Dylan Gabriel in the third round and then Shador in the fifth round. But whatever, they saw a guy who was plummeting down draft boards and said, we don't have a quarterback right now, let's just see how many we can get. And their owner probably loved him, so they took Shador. I don't know. And if Shador got humbled, it might be the best thing that ever happens to him.
Well, let's dive into that next, because there's some more news around that and why, particularly why he fell. We'll get to that next. But first, it's Big Kahuna with Sports Center Update. All right, we hit on the 30,000-foot view of the NFL draft last segment. But let's be honest, as much as we don't want to continue to rehash and dive into it, but you were out yesterday. The free fall of Shador Sanders was, look, when we talked about it on Friday, I was like, what's the chances that not only does he go out of the second round, I'm like, I could easily see him once he got past that midpoint in the second round, I'm like, he might be a fourth or fifth round guy. And we kind of went, because we just didn't think somebody would do something in that middle of the second, at worst early in the third. But like, there was a real possibility that we said, it's there.
Well, we talked about the fact that two quarterback needy teams already filled it, with Tennessee and New York in that first round, with Cam Ward, who a lot of people are like, nobody's even talking about the number one overall pick. I actually think that's the best thing that could ever happen for Cam Ward.
Just because go play football.
Now Cam Ward, it does not have any of the pressure that usually comes with being a quarterback drafted number one overall. And, you know, a lot of guys, they thrive under that pressure. Well, he can just fly under the radar. There's low expectations in Tennessee in year one for him, and he can just go play ball. But after those two teams filled their quarterback needs, there aren't a whole lot of teams that need a quarterback. And Derek Harmon going to Pittsburgh, like, that was the first, like, beacon of, hey, maybe Pittsburgh's just not in this quarterback game.
Which?
And then New Orleans went Tyler Shuck, and it was like, oh, boy, like, this is really going to hurt for him, because then who's going to take him? Cleveland was the last one. And we said Cleveland had two of the top four picks of the second round. They did right by their organization, though, and they went in that second round with, we need to fill needs before we go to quarterback. Dylan Gabriel going in the third round was a surprise.
We were texting back and forth like, what just happened here?
Yeah, I like when Cleveland came on the board, I was like, it would be hilarious. I texted a buddy of mine and said, it would be hilarious if Dylan Gabriel went before Shedeur Sanders. And I wasn't talking about to Cleveland. He got drafted because it was right when they flashed Dylan Gabriel having his draft party at his house. And when that popped up, I was like, well, that's interesting, because everybody kind of assumed he'd be a Saturday guy. And he was having his draft party on Friday, which means he probably got some intel that a team liked him. Turns out, Cleveland fell in love with Dylan Gabriel at the Reese's Senior Bowl. And they had their coaching staff was coaching the Senior Bowl, and they were around Dylan Gabriel. That was like a shot across the bow to me. Leadership matters at that position, because all of the tangibles that Dylan Gabriel lacks in, he exceeds in the intangibles, which is his leadership. I mean, first time he talked to us, right, when he was at Big Ten Media Day, we asked him how he's doing. He said elite, right? He's just got those. He's a vibes guy in the locker room, gets along with everybody, is all about football. You know, and people kind of made fun of the joke of, you know, Aston Martin for Quinn Ewers at Texas, a Lamborghini for Carson Beck at Georgia. He's driving a minivan because he wanted to be able to go pick up his wide receivers and take them to go and throw. That's who he is, though, right? So, and he's super smart between the ears, football sense wise. Like, I think Dylan Gabriel is going to have a spot in the NFL for a really long time, not as a high-end starting quarterback, but because of everything else. Because
he doesn't rock the boat.
He doesn't. And his skill set, you know, his tangibles, he's not tall. He isn't.
No.
He isn't. He's not the fastest quarterback.
Doesn't have the biggest arm. Move.
No, but he does all of the little things right. And, like, everybody's like, he's so short. At Oklahoma, he had a 6'7" left tackle. He still threw the hell out of the ball. There's a lot of things in the NFL that change. Having tall offensive linemen isn't really one that is a big bother. But I don't think he's going to be a high-level starter in the NFL. I think he's going to be a guy who sticks around for a really damn long time. But when they took him in the third round, I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
When the fifth round came and Shedeur was sitting there, I was like, dude, he may just start telling teams not to draft him if he makes it past Cleveland.
Pick where you want to go kind of a deal.
Yeah, just say sixth, seventh round. If I'm not getting the guaranteed money, I'm out, and I'll sign as a free agent somewhere. He goes to Cleveland, though. That was a surprise. I was surprised.
Especially after taking Dylan Gabriel. And if you haven't seen it yet, the Cleveland Browns draft room.
Oh, boy.
When they take Shedeur Sanders, you don't see a single emotion on a single person's face.
Yeah, because
it's Jimmy Haslam, the ownership. They said, go get Shedeur Sanders.
They were drafting a backup. They were drafting a backup there. You don't start jumping up and down hooting hollering for a backup.
No. And even then, they probably didn't want him in the building.
Yeah.
To be fair. And Boomer Esiason has kind of more intel on that in general.
They took him off. And they took him off because the owner said, take him off. I don't want that guy. Shedeur Sanders just torpedoed himself. His attitude off the field at the combine, his dad didn't help him either. You know, he was on podcast talking about, this is my son. If I can get him to where I want to get him to, I'm going to do that. But, you know, when you listen to this kid talk right prior or at the combine about, if you want a new culture in your locker room, I'm the guy to do that. I can turn it around. I mean, he's very high on himself. And I think he was very off-putting to many, many coaches and general managers in the league. And I'm telling you right now, and I know this after talking to three different personnel people in the NFL this weekend. They didn't even have him on his board, on their board. They took him off, and they took him off because the owner said, take him off. I don't want that guy. I don't want this entitled person on our team. And I don't blame him.
Yikes, dog. And that's not collusion. Because collusion is saying, we don't want you here at all in the league. This is...
He's talking on a case-by-case basis. Several teams that he had talked to had said, no, we don't want him.
And it didn't have to do with his dad. It had to do with him.
And look, a lot of it does have to do with his dad, yes, though, because his dad was going on podcasts saying, I'm going to Eli Manning this. I'm going to make sure my kid goes to where I want him to go. And when you get the vibe, when you meet with the guy, and the reports coming out of New York was that he came unprepared to his meeting with Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll called him on it, and he got snippy about being unprepared. Because if you don't know, when you show up to your top 30 meetings with teams, they will give you an install when you get there of, all right, this is what it looks like. This is our offense. This is what we do. You know, you need to learn this. Come back tomorrow. And
then you whiteboard it.
And then you whiteboard it. You talk about it. You talk about concepts that were similar to what you ran when you were in college, where you were at, and how it's going to translate in verbiage and all those things. He had no idea. And that's the reports that are coming out. When that happens, there's no bigger red flag than that.
You know what it reminds me of? The DVD. Jamarcus.
Yeah.
Jamarcus Russell, when he was a rookie with the Raiders, quarterback's coach gave him film to watch on a DVD. They took it home. They checked with him the next day. What'd you think? Oh, yeah, I loved it. This, and this. The DVD was blank.
Yikes.
Blank. It was a test. It was an interview after the interview, and that's when they knew. It was like, oh no,
yeah,
oh no. And I think you're looking around at organizations. Look, there is we've talked about this God knows how many times. Not just with Shador. There is a sliding scale of BS that you can put up with. Look, if this is Andrew Luck and he's got Shador Sanders' attitude, at minimum, 10 teams in the NFL say, screw it, I don't care. Because you're just going,
the other thing,
this guy's 6'5", rocket for an arm, smartest quarterback we've maybe ever seen. The way he goes about everything he does is picture perfect. I don't care about his attitude.
And the thing about the New York interview and that process is that was a place that they thought he should have been. Mm-hmm. So you can only imagine what it was like at some of the other places where he didn't want to go to, that Dion had flagged of
no-go zones.
I'm gonna Eli Manning this thing and get you to the place I want to be. And all of those things play a big role. And that's on top of what he lacks as a quarterback himself. And we talked about this. And I've been saying this for the longest time, and I don't understand. I thought what Mel Kiper did during the draft coverage was embarrassing.
It was nasty.
I mean,
like a pouty child.
Yeah, and saying that the NFL doesn't know how to evaluate quarterbacks, neither do you or any other draft prognosticator. It's not just a Mel Kiper Jr. thing.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what it's like when you get to the NFL because your offensive line matters, your scheme matters, your weapons around you matter, the division that you play in matters. All of those things we don't know yet.
Brandon Bean, the general manager of the Bills, we played it yesterday. He went on our Odyssey partner in Buffalo, was it WGR 550, and gave like a 2-minute tirade of like, can you guys stop complaining about everything? Do you remember in 2017 when we drafted Josh Allen and you guys specifically wanted Josh Rosen?
Yeah.
Maybe we know what we're doing here.
Well, and everybody, and this, look, this may break really well for Shador because he might get humbled. He may just say, oh boy, maybe dad doesn't know everything because I'm not a transcendent talent like my dad was.
Yeah, and on top of that, look, if you're looking for the first piece of recognition or good luck, the first point of inflection for them where they recognized where something might be going wrong, Shiloh Sanders and Shador were live streaming during the draft in case Shiloh got drafted. He said something along the lines of, yeah, I may have made a mistake in having my dad be my representative. The next day, the press release and the social media posts go out about Shiloh Sanders signing with Drew Rosenhaus. About as big of an indicator of we bleeped this up.
Yep.
Yeah. Like that is, I got to give Shiloh credit because to like this, this looks a lot like LaVar Ball, but his kids didn't get drafted. Lonzo and LaMelo both got drafted very high.
And I think there is real validity to people concerned and questioning the fact that Shador's never been coached by anybody but his dad. From youth all the... And that means his high school coach was Dion. Mm-hmm. Then he took the job at Jackson State. Mm-hmm. Then he took the job at Colorado. That
setting him up for the best possible flight.
And I said this during the season last year. Shador takes a ton of sacks that are his fault. Not all of them were.
No.
And they weren't. But he took a ton of sacks that were his own making and his own doing. Also pointed out that a lot of their play calling did not make sense because they'd be blowing a team out or they'd be down by a ton and they would just be padding stats. Mm-hmm. That was real.
Yeah.
That, I mean,
well, did you hear the latest?
He was
on?
Taking sacks so his completion percentage would be really high. You can't do that in the NFL. Sacks are drive killers. You want to see one way that you kill your drive in the NFL? It doesn't matter if it's a 1 yard sack or a 10 yard sack. Get sacked. That kills your drive.
Did you see the latest? Deion Sanders wants to be a part of Shador Sanders' first meeting with the Browns.
No. If I'm the Browns, I'm like,
hell no.
No, thank you.
No. You can come to games.
Yeah.
You're not coming into the facility.
No.
You're not a coach here.
Mm-mm.
I don't care who you are.
That's brutal. And look, as a parent, his heart's in the right place.
Yes, but it's a hell no.
The execution is no.
It's absolutely a hell no. All right, when we wrap up today's show, we will talk about some NFL transactions that, well, they were in the making. Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. It turns out Diana Rossini, she might have been right. She said George Kittle was looking to reset the tight end market, and indeed, George Kittle did reset the tight end market.
Yeah, yes, he did, with some caveats. In Rossini's tweet was that was the goal of George Kittle.
Mm.
And he called her out on it. He was like, that's not true. Mm. But he ended up signing a record extension today. 4 years, $76.4
million. Mm-hmm.
$40 million is guaranteed, $35 at signing.
Yeah. That's a big old chunk.
And this is where his contract is only in... it's pomp and circumstance. So Trey McBride signed for $19 million a year. This deal is worth 19.1. But when you kind of look at the details of it, this is only a for show deal.
Oh, yeah.
Because he, in the final year of his deal, he'll be making $22.4
million. Mm-hmm. Non-guaranteed.
He will be 36 years old, and that year will be 2029.
Mm-hmm.
George Kittle will probably, in all likelihood, will not be playing at 36. He's banged up now,
yeah.
Entering 2025. So they did right by him. They gave him the old tip of the hat, but Trey McBride's deal is better.
Oh, sure.
But he got a ton of money, and hell yeah, I think tight ends should be paid way more.
Yeah, they should.
And I think that getting over that threshold, even just by a little bit more on annual average mm-hmm. salary, that's what tight ends need to be doing because, look, they are an extension of the offensive line and an extension of the receiving core. Every great team has a very good tight end. Mm-hmm. I mean, full stop on that.
Yeah, I said it when
he's the best.
Kittle said this about Rossini, that the reason he was frustrated was because the source that Rossini had was clearly way too close.
Yeah, yeah.
Look,
yeah.
I mean, He knew what he wanted. Look, and I don't begrudge a guy for resetting the market.
Well, Diana loves victory laps. Did she make a victory lap on this one?
I didn't see it.
Yeah.
If she did, it wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, yeah, no. Somebody tweeted, a lot of people owe Diana Rossini an apology.
She retweeted?
She said, it's all good. Happened before, it'll happen again. Glad it all worked out.
Hmm. Look, Diana's about as sourced as it gets. If she's putting it out there, man.
Yeah, and her tweet originally was, George Kittle wants to become the highest paid player at his position. And so her tweet today was, George Kittle wanted to become the highest paid player at his position. Tuesday, he signed an extension that includes $40 million guaranteed and sets a record for average annual value. Booyah. She got it.
Nailed it.
Victory laps.
Yeah.
All right.
When you got the goods, you got the goods.
Yeah. Rossini's great. She does a really good job. All of their reporters, they miss a lot. They really do.
Mm-hmm.
They miss a ton. Doesn't matter how sourced you are, how good you are.
Things
at your
can
job.
Change.
Well, and they're
carrying some water.
So many franchises do misdirection too.
Mm-hmm.
It's in agents, especially.
Look, it's why I want no part of the newsbreaker world in the NBA. There's just too much. There's just too much stuff.
Yeah.
A hard pass.
It's a dirty, dirty little world that they live in. But congrats to George Kittle. I love George Kittle.
No, and good. Good on him and in the fellow tight end cohorts of raising that line.
Those sickos. Yeah. All right. We got three NBA games tonight.
We do. Not all great.
Knicks Pistons. I like that game.
I'm in for that one. God, I'm still pissed about how that one ended. Yeah, the NBA said, oops, our bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tim Hardaway Jr. got tackled. Yeah, no kidding.
That's a tough one to be like, my bad, but I'm glad they did it, finally.
I'm sure Pistons fans are thrilled about it being down 3-1, where NBA teams win like 97% of the series instead of it being 2-2.
Yeah, it's really easy to win in Madison Square Garden, too, in the playoffs. Yeah. Mm. Then we have Magic Celtics. Celtics can put the nail in the coffin of Orlando, and they need to do that. They're dinged up, man.
Drew Holiday is going to be out again, and they were talking about somebody else was potentially questionable. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I think they were looking at maybe Tatum being questionable, even though he was incredible last game.
They need to sweep the leg. And then the game everybody should be watching, Clippers Nuggets, 7 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, with the most bonkers ending finish, which the NBA did confirm was the right call. The Aaron Gordon tip dunk was the right call on it being good.
That's only the second tip dunk I can, or like a dunk at the buzzer.
It's the first tip dunk since like 95 for a game winner. Like as like clock expiring.
Okay, so is that, because the only other one I think of is DeAndre Ayton in Phoenix.
Yep.
Which was not 1995.
No. But it
did
also
they not
it,
consider there was, that a dunk?
Well, no, there was still time left.
Okay.
There's like point one or point two.
That's the hardest part is how does that even happen?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Aaron Gordon's awesome. Did Jokic shoot it?
No. God, no.
That was a pass?
Yeah.
We're gonna call it a pass? Okay. All right, that'll do it for us today. Hey, Rob's back. So coming up next, you got 4 hours of power from his mouth to your ears. It's prime time with Isaac and Buck right here on The Fan. Have a great Tuesday.
Bye.